very welcome here this afternoon. Thank you very much. It's great to see so many people here. My own name is Marianne Kennedy, Marianne Kineda, and I'm working in the University of Galway and currently teaching drama for young audiences or theatre for young audiences. And it is really wonderful to be here in Babarow, where we have Babarow founded 2 years after the UN Convention of the Rights of the Child, which states that children should have the right to have access to arts experiences. So as a rights-based organization that came after the UN Convention, I suppose this is a really brilliant opportunity and platform for us to debate and to think about these things. So the panel we have here today, to my immediate left, we have Noel Jordan, who needs, I'm sure, no introduction from any of you, but is the festival director for the Edinburgh International Children's Festival and Imaginate. And then we have Phil Kingston, who is the community education manager in the Abbey Theatre and currently in real life is touring to 10 shows in 5 schools in County Galway. So they're actually in schools at the moment with their show. And we have Claire O'Neill then, who is here as producer for theatre maker Paul Curley. And Paul is currently just off stage with in the Riverbank with the show, new show Dots, which is going out on tour. So congratulations and thank you for being here. Mags Walsh then is the program director for Creative Schools and lots of really interesting ideas and thoughts when we were all talking earlier about the different models and different ways people are touring. And Mark McLaughlin, fresh from Antwerp, leaves. But Mark is the artistic director of Branner and needs, again, no introduction, the show that they're doing in the Thaiverk, but also has done so many different engagements with schools in many different ways. Without further ado, we're going to ask the panels in the order that they are seated, that they might talk a little, give us a little bit of context about your own work and where you're coming from, and then let us know what your interest is in this.
Okay. So I've got some slides and there's a lot. And I'm really going to take you through a lot of kind of facts and history of Theatre in Schools Scotland, as we call it. Theatre in Schools Scotland is an initiative that was actually started 10 years ago in 2016. Actually, next year will be our 10th anniversary. It's currently funded by the National Theatre of Scotland and Imaginate. That's our mission there. My role in Theatre in Schools Scotland is actually just a member of the curatorial panel that help picks the shows. And it's made up of two staff members from NTS and three from Imaginate. A little bit unbalanced, but anyway, here we go. Bit of a quote here and why we're existing about the kind of rationale of taking work very democratically out across Scotland, performing into school halls and also school classrooms. So here we go with the facts. Began in 2016, as I said, it was a pilot project that ran for 3 years. The stats from those 3 years are really interesting. It was actually developed in partnership with Catherine Wheels. We've got Tony here, who's a member of that company. So Tony, if I say anything wrong, please just jump in. We also have Visible Fictions and Star Catchers. So in the beginning, those three companies were very integral to how we set this structure up. But after a while, it was really the two companies that were putting in the financial funds that kept the project going. We have toured 14 productions in that pilot year to 52,000 children in schools. So all 32 Scottish local authority areas were covered, which is a big deal for the National Theatre of Scotland, because if you think about it, that really reaches their remit about covering the country. So it was really in their interest to keep going with this. So some of the practicalities, the bookings for TIST are all handled either directly through a local authority or with the schools themselves, and it's handled by a national schools project manager. The cost, I'm being very transparent what it is. I've even had them in euros, so you can work out what the difference is. So £500 a day, it means you get two performances. And the average is between 160 to 240 students will see a project, depending on, of course, that fee will be the same whether it's a large or small scale production, but they really are mostly small scale, one or two performers. The cost per pupil is interesting. It's only £3. Mm. It originally was higher, but we found that there was pushback from schools, so it was lowered. So in reflection of what we charge for a festival, it's virtually half price to have a TIS show in your school than it is to come to the festival. So on average, there's 14 weeks of touring across the year, dependent on the scale of the works. And as I said, the project manager is doing the school bookings. There's the budget. So the big chunk of this money is coming from NTS. I won't lie about it. Without them, this project would not happen. We put in a small amount of money and we share the same staff member. What does it mean practically to the companies? They get an amount of, between £8,000 to £9,000 in pounds for 2 weeks to remount the show. It's tried and tested works. It can't be a brand new work. We want to feel confident what we're sending out to schools, so the demand will be there to keep going. The weekly fee that a company would get is there. Accommodation, per diems, van hire, that is additional to that price that we offer. Here's some stats. So if you remember what I said before, what we did in the first 3 years, this is what we've done in 10 years. So you can see what happened. COVID happened, but coming out of COVID, we have really struggled to rebuild. We are rebuilding, but it is not easy. 34 productions have gone out on the road and nearly 1,500 performances, which is brilliant. Here's a couple of quotes from artists who've been a part of the program. This particular artist, Hazel, actually toured to schools either via public transport or by bicycle. And the show was called Maya and the Whale. Moving on, this was at Barbaro. Yes, Family Portrait, if you saw it. Yeah. So it's a screen installation work, quite challenging to do in a school setup, but the company did. And it's been a real pleasure working with Barrowland Ballet. They actually, when we have call outs for submissions, they present some of the most ambitiously challenging works. We don't always select them, but this worked particularly well. And this is something, I don't know if you've had this piece here, Four Go Wild in Wellies, by Independent Dance. And they're a company of dancers with and without disabilities. And they've toured overseas as well. So some of the TIS productions, that means I've got 2 minutes. Some of the TIS productions have actually began as schools touring scale models. If you think of the Ballad of Pond Life McGurk, it was originally made to tour to schools. It toured internationally at that scale. And then eventually Catherine Wheels made an in-theatre larger scale version. So it doesn't have to be a theatre show that then is scaled down. But if it is a theatre show that's scaled down, you've only got that 2 weeks of re-rehearsal to do that. Mm. Here's some of the challenges. Basically, sourcing the work. We quickly ran out of the back catalogue of Scottish work within the first 3 years. So not many companies are making small-scale work. Catherine Wheels, by far, is probably one of the most consistent companies who are presenting within the program. The Creative Scotland Touring Fund does not support touring to schools. So a company might come up with a model where they tour to venues and they work with us doing TIS on the side, going into schools. That's funded separately. Other challenges is, the funding it. If you look at the bottom there, we did have a sponsor at one point called Scottish Salmon. It no longer has a sponsor at all. So it's literally the two companies. Now the good stuff. Hang on. Here we go. Next year, 10-year anniversary, which is super exciting. And as it says here, it's completely free. Now, the minute we made that decision, We were able to use NTS's funding department, who've got trust and foundation support. The minute you took the ticket price off, they could fund it. Interesting. Mm. And so we're doing a larger scale offer, hoping to get to far more people, hoping to rebuild the project, if you like, because it needs a reboot. And we're really hopeful that this will be a new era for TIS, but it is so dependent on the ecological structure of the industry. Without the work coming through, TIS won't exist. Thank you.
So next speaker we will have is Phil Kingston. And Phil...
Hello.
Hello. We'll leave you to take the floor.
Hi, I'm going to speak about the Abbey's touring of schools. And I'm delighted, actually, that one of the pioneers of it is here today, actually. So I will mention her later on. Yes, Mary Lou McCarthy. There we go.
Yay!
Absolutely. Yeah. who was the original Molzer and me Molzer. So we started doing work in schools in 2012, and it was a shameless steal from the work of Tim Crouch and the work of the RSC in the UK. They used to do, the RSC still does Shakespeare in schools, and Tim Crouch did these fantastic shows called IEP's Blossom and I Malvolio, where he extracted a character from the canon and did a play from that character's point of view. And we did the same with the Irish canon, feeling like we'd like to give primary school children access to their canon maybe a bit earlier than actually the 3 hours, 3.5 hours or whatever, when they'll eventually come across. So Me Molzer was the first show. Mary Lou was the original Molzer. And Sarah Fitzgibbon, I must mention her because she was the director and the co-dramaturg, and very much this project was created with her. She's now teaching at TU Dublin. The thing about it was kind of under the radar, because I discovered that, having been made community and education manager, that there really wasn't any particular policy of work for young people at the Abbey. It was dependent upon what the artistic director or the director wanted to program. So in order to have an engagement with young people, we needed to make some work for young people. And we really wanted to take that work into the schools, as opposed to have, in a way, to have the schools come to us. We felt like saying, this is a medium that can be magic in a space that you feel comfortable in. So we've been doing, did Prime in the Canon. We did four Prime in the Canon shows, all based on famous plays on the Canon. And we've just got a new show, which is also still based on the canon, actually. It's just that the Abbey, being a national theatre, when it changes direction or changes directors, it changes policy slightly every time. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so the new directors wanted to go, our primary school work, to go in a different direction. But actually, we've made another show based on a canonical work, which is Spreading the News by Lady Gregory. That's called In Real Life. And that's in, it was in schools in Mayo last week. It's in schools in Galway for the festival, and it's in schools in Cork next week. And Ursula McGinn, the director, is here as well. Exactly. Okay, I mean, I suppose what I can talk about is, I mean, TIS is a really good example, and it's something that, you know, we'd aspire to. It seems fantastic, and I hear also the problems as well. And also, we're just one company, as it were. I know we're the National Theatre, but we are kind of one company amongst many. I mean, like Lovitz, Branner, there's so many fantastic companies. No, so many, I'll take that back. There are many fantastic companies in Ireland. So I can really only comment on what it's been like for us. There is an advantage in being the National Theatre. People will take your call. They will. They will, yeah? So, and I suppose, let's be candid, as this short time, it's interesting that having a work that's based on something in the canon helps as well. I found dealing with the education world is that it tends to be quite conservative. So if you can appeal to tradition, that helps. When we're actually bringing new work into schools, but the fact that it's attached to the tradition really does help. There's no doubt about it. Scale. Originally, the idea was that it was going to be in classrooms. So you literally pushed the tables back and you did it in a classroom. So 30 max. That wasn't always the case, was it, Mary Lou?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, exactly. So what would happen is it became popular very quickly. We found that it really was popular. And venues started to say, can we bring schools in as opposed to them going out to local schools? And we said yes. And it depends on the performer, but Mary Lou's capacity to scale up a work that was very interactive from 30 to 150 is admirable. Yeah. And she did do that several times. But generally speaking, we can cover about 30 people per class, two shows a day. We're talking 300 schools per week. 300 children per week. And not 300 schools. And so, sorry about that. I know, I'm brilliant. But anyway, so what was interesting is that you're never going to reach enough people. So, you know, we always wanted more scale. And we briefly had it once when the Department of Education gave us a grant to do three simultaneous versions of Mi Molza during 2016. So they were out on the road at the same time. And we did that twice, in fact. And we covered about 5,000. We reached 5,000 children that year. But I'd say we dream of scale, but we don't want to undermine the quality of the work. We really don't. I mean, I think, you know, Mary Lou did some fantastic work with large audiences, but we also value that experience of a smaller audience. Okay, useful things to say in summary. funding. So generally speaking, we could get one funder. Okay, but I did some research on other primary school touring programs in national theatres around the world. And what was noticeable was the amount of multiple funding was going on. It's quite hard to do that because the funder doesn't want to share it with anybody else. Yeah. So that's something that's not my problem. It's the development partner's problem, but it is an issue. Sometimes it's funding, which it costs us. The In Real Life tour is costing us 35 to 40 grand. Okay. That's for 3 weeks, only for 3 weeks. Okay. It's got slightly more expensive, not just because everything's got more expensive, but also because the structure of the show has got more expensive. We've had somebody come in, sort of a stage manager, company manager is there all the time, as it were. It used to be just two people. It's now three. So that thing's got more expensive that way. Ticket price. So we charge 250 per show for one show, 200 if you're desk school. Then we negotiate if you want two shows in a day. We did once do it for free during COVID when Sarah filmed it in both English and Irish and also wrote an extra piece at the beginning, so it was contemporary. That was filmed in Henrietta Street. It was a fantastic piece of work. And a decision was made that it would be given away for free. It's the only time we've ever had any negative feedback for it, is because it was given away for free. Mm. And I do have to say that when people pay for things, they tend to value them more. And, you know, fact of life. So we struggle with this idea of free, because sometimes the work isn't valued.
Yeah. Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay, and now we'll move on to Claire. And I suppose you're talking about research that Paul received a bursary in order to do this work, particularly in schools. Yeah.
So we partnered with the 8 venues, the wonderful venues down at the bottom. A surprise, surprise, not to anybody, but the venues are so key to this. The venues are really, particularly for individual artists, they're your link into the community, they're your connection to the schools. They're absolutely essential. And while bursary funded, Paul and Vincent, his stage manager, production manager, going on the road, it doesn't capture the incredible in-kind. Well, we captured for the Arts Council, but the incredible value of that in-kind work that the venues do in terms of coordinating with the schools and booking you in and doing all of that work, you know? So this is a screenshot of the impact that we had. So 16 schools across 8 counties did 25 performances, and we reached over 1,800 children over the course of the tour. Little Red Van, and the two shows that went out were known entities again, which is really, really important. They had been done, they had had full productions, they had been revised and rescaled across a couple of different iterations, and are now at a point where they fit perfectly into the Little Red Van and they can get into a school in less than an hour, which is also really, really key in terms of access times, getting the show in, doing two performances a day and getting out before a principal inevitably tells you that 50 kids are coming into the hall to do gymnastics or something the second you finished your performance, you know. So the shows are Bake and the shows are Dig. And they were for two different age groups, which again was really important because it gave you different offerings. Sometimes we did, over the course of this tour, go back to the same school with both options in terms of the younger show. Bake is for younger audiences and the Dig is for slightly older audiences. They have different capacities, which also impacted the audience reach. Bake is capped at 60 children, whereas the Dig can go to up to 130 in a school hall. And it takes, that's for slightly older children. Here are some of the comments from the partner venues. Have a little read there. You know, we did things like have an introductory video in terms of sending info to the schools. This was really important for bringing new schools on board. Like with some venues, there are schools that have fantastic relationships and like the venue manager or the schools coordinator barely has to pick up a phone and the school is taking the work. We worked really hard in ensuring that new schools came into the fold at every iteration here. And there were a few things that were helpful there. One of them was the introductory video. The other one, as we've talked about, is the cost. So there does need to be some cost, but the cost is not to be too high. And that makes it really possible for the school to take it on board. And we have encountered in some instances, we found the PA as well. We're also part of the magic chain here because they were fundraising and they were very happy to allocate some money towards it. Some of the challenges, unsurprising, the same as what Noel and Philip talked about, getting through to the schools. Not every school is suitable for a school presentation. You know, some schools are very small. They're physically very small. They might not have a hall that can take it. What we found, again, amazing part of this ecosystem as well is the libraries. You know, the libraries are amazing partners. They're amazing to work with. But in some instances, on other things we've toured to schools, the library has actually been the building locally that actually has a space that can take this better than the school hall or the lack of a school hall if it's in huge demand. Transport is always a challenge, whether you're transporting the set or you're trying to transport the kids to the venue. But transport always comes up as a challenge. There are administrative and producing costs involved. And I think, again, this is where the venue was essential. Like, it's not possible for an individual artist, and you both alluded to that in terms of having a project manager, to be in contact with schools directly and to coordinate that. And, you know, there's kind of a magic touch required in terms of who you talk to in school, who's your advocate, and so forth. Approaching new schools takes more time. So that's really important to build that into whatever model you're doing. It's really worth it, but it does take more time. And selling school shows become more challenging. So bringing the work to them helps in some ways. I think we've all seen that in different ways. It was an amazing surge, I think, of a couple of years post-COVID because people have starved of activities and they kind of took up every opportunity. And now we all know the schools are incredibly overwhelmed with what they're trying to manage and the amount of options they have. And then here are the recommendations. Oh, yeah, that was, so the van went out to Clare Island, which was one of our favourite stops. It went on the ferry. It might have gotten a flat tire in the course of that lift. But that was amazing. That was an amazing trip. So really, really quickly, as I said, I'll skip the ones I've already done. The venue is so important. Previous trust relationships are so important. Your advocate, your teacher advocate is important. Or your secretary can be a key, a key gatekeeper. Keeping the cost low, wide range of classes. That's why we had the two shows we did. So basically we could go from 4 to 12 with those two options for people. It's not a replacement for a trip to the theatre. That's also really, really important, but it is an incredible way to reach a wide audience. It's really important to prepare the school in advance of the visit, you know, particularly if they haven't had it before. Like sometimes set pieces and things appear, somebody can be taken aback, you know, by what's coming in terms of the scale of what's coming in. Again, as we've alluded, known entities that are reimagined for going into schools is really, really important. And then in terms of like one of the key recommendations Paul going forward is some sort of a pilot program that we can wish about and imagine about afterwards, but to get the momentum, it stuff needs to go out twice a year, every year for the next 3 to 5 years to really get those schools embedded and on board all over the county. Emphasize that there. There he is, the end on Clare Island with a van.
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much. And that little red van. Thank you. Great. And moving from Clare Island to creative schools and to Mags Walsh. Love to hear
Hi, everyone. It's lovely to be here. And I'm going to talk about the creative schools model, which is led by the Arts Council, but I'm also probably going to touch on some things that we in the Arts Council have noticed over the last while about theatre in schools. And thanks to my colleagues, Liz and Finn, who are here from the Arts Council as well, who've helped me do my homework for this session. So actually, I might start there with in terms of what we've seen in terms of the pattern of how artists are engaging with schools over the last number of years. And that'd be across the touring awards, but like the bursary awards is a great example, and project awards where schools feature a lot. We're seeing a lot of multiple art forms. So where traditionally maybe theatre was seen as the piece that was going into schools more frequently, visual art is very prevalent at the moment. Dance is prevalent. Circus is prevalent. And it's often multidisciplinary a bit as well. There's kind of a crossover there going on as well. What's really interesting is that there are so many different partnerships that are going into the proposals. So we're seeing artists and venues in partnership. We're seeing artists and libraries and local authorities in partnership. We're seeing artists with creative producers. We're seeing artists who are engaging with creative production support structures to move stuff into schools. So there is maybe the older model of, you know, it was only a company that toured, or it was an individual artist who toured and hoped to survive it, has definitely changed. There's definitely some sense of an ecosystem coming around that space. The other thing to say is that where there's a lot of engagement with schools, it's not always at the finished piece. Like, we know a lot of companies are developing work in stages by going in and out with schools and having kind of a co-development thing, which is really interesting. I think part of that comes from everyone's commitment to children and young people having a strong voice in the work that's created for them. And schools are a great place for that interaction to happen. And then the other thing is, I think we've seen an increasing focus on thinking about audiences with very additional needs, or working from a more inclusive practice around bringing performances into spaces as well. Then if you go back to the creative schools model, which is part of the reason why I'm here. So in creative schools, we work with schools for 2 years. So we have about 350 schools working with us at any one time. We give them a fairly modest grant of €4,000, but more importantly, we give them a creative associate. I know we have creative associates in the room with me today. So they are incredibly skilled professionals who work with that school for the 2 years to really help that school understand where they are now with arts and creativity, and then try to understand where they might want to go next, to help them plan to do all the things that teachers may not have the time or the capacity to do. So to research what's out there, to figure out how they're going to get there, to think about who's in their local area, to lift the phone and start asking people for either more money or access to things, or to be the kind of confidence of the school as they move into the space. So that's what's really helpful. But a really important part of that is that schools are entirely not homogenous. We sometimes talk about schools like they're exactly the same thing. There are 4,500 schools in Ireland, and there are 4,500 different schools in Ireland. No school I go to is ever the same. And schools are living communities in and of themselves, with often big and small challenges coming through their doors every day. So that's why the model in creative schools is not prescriptive. We don't tell those schools what to do. We don't ask them to tick particular things. It is the school themselves who decide what they're going to do with their time and their space. And that's led the schools to have far better ideas than any of us could ever have for them, and for them to go off and do really imaginative and creative things. But there's no denying it. There's really challenging situations for schools at the moment. Teachers are time poor. Buses. Would anyone like to have a panel about buses? Because I would. Transport is a huge barrier. We had a conversation with some Finnish colleagues last week for a national project which has a lot of budget. 55% of their budget is transport. Like, you know, from an arts perspective, you think the big thing is going to be the work and, you know, the costs of the work. Sometimes in this area, you have to look at a different proportion, and you have to be prepared to own up to that proportion and say, well, actually, if we don't have that, then we can't do the thing that we want to do. And Finland's interesting because of the geographic reach. You know, there are areas in Finland that are very far away from each other. So that it was a really interesting reminder for me for that. But there are great opportunities working with schools as well. And that's maybe where the kind of conversation about the need for models happens, because anytime something good happens or something works really well, my experience is with anyone who works in children's and young people's arts is like, well, more people must have this because it's really good. And the kind of ambition to ensure there's equity and to ensure that no kid gets left out means that we constantly move towards, well, actually, what's the model? We're like, oh, we want to pilot, and then we'll move to the next stage, and then we'll move to the next stage. And that does work really, really well. But the downside of a model is it doesn't work for everyone because it's a model. Mm. So there are swings and roundabouts to developing models. And we would certainly say there are pluses and minuses to how we roll out creative skills, for example. And that's why you'd want it to be constantly iterating. Oh my God, that was fast. So if we were looking at the glass half full and spaces where now in a very particular context that we're in now, would open up some space for a model is partnership. Like, I cannot do my job without my partnership with the Department of Education. It is not just that they send a check, because they don't, they send it by bank transfer, but it is that they unlock things that I am not able to unlock. So if you're a teacher in the Creative Skills program, you get substitution cover when you come out of school to train with us. Like that literally allows the school to release that teacher from to me for the day. Like, and I can't buy that. I can only deliver that through partnership with the Department of Education. So every model and maybe earlier in my career in the arts, I would always think, well, let's just forge ahead. But actually, it's in the alliance building in the early stages of a model that the richest dividends are paid. And then you unlock things that you didn't think you could ever possibly get. The other thing I think that's really valuable is like the benefits to young people, of children, of participating in the arts are undeniable, researched, you know, unimpeachable. We know, you know, cognitive development, it's well-being. We know it's all those things, and teachers know it's all those things as well. So they are in some way converted to the merits of it. They will always say to me that it's easier to move something in schools for a match than it is to move it for a music performance. So there is still a little bit of inequity that we've got to deal with. But the stronger we are and more strident we are in our arguments around the benefits to children and young people are participating in the arts, the way we can sort of move that one forward. And then I just did really want to mention the role of the champion teacher. So sometimes it's the champion receptionist, sometimes it's the champion person on the parents association, but there generally is a champion. Luckily, we have seen some of those champions recognized with posts of responsibility in schools, and we're seeing an increasing number of those posts and responsibility having arts and culture designated to it. So it's only a tiny thing, but it allows a structure in a school to recognize that role. And then just a really quick one, people may have seen the primary arts curriculum came out this year, and in it, it explicitly says partnership with artists' organizations. It is underdeveloped as of yet, what that actually means, like all curriculums, they go slow. But there is like there's real cause for optimism for that in me, that we would say within curriculum, the partnership with the sector is really important. So that's an open door. So models, yay, models, maybe.
Thank you so much, Miles. Thank you. And we just need the clicker there now for Mark. And I suppose it's great to see when you think about those alliances and champions. It's a wonderful concept to think that we do those ecosystems and the development of them are as important as the work and getting the transport and all the ancillary that is around the art is hugely, hugely important. And obviously we're in a situation where the schools, we have a new curriculum and for secondary schools as well, which is going to really affect change in how arts are approached within the school system at second level as well. So without further ado, Mark has his clicker and
I have a clicker.
Get going.
Thank you. So ever since we began working nearly 25 years ago, Branner began working in schools. Working in venues came second. So we've always kind of made work that was able to go into a school, and then, or else we'd make work that was specifically for venues. And sometimes they both work in the same place. The reason why we do it is ultimately we want to help to make the school a place that's a place of wonder, because schools are horrible utilitarian buildings, really. And even the new ones are like just pastel colors and they're not nice. An architect thought they were nice at some stage. But we kind of want to make them to create an event in the school that is different and makes the place feel like it's a creative space and somewhere where they can enjoy an experience that doesn't have to teach them anything. and they can just be there to experience something. Also, the idea of access. So to make sure that we can reach all children. The fact that not all children have the wonderful opportunity to have parents who know where art centers are or know that they can bring them to something. So if you go into schools, that's where you find everybody. And I think that's one of the most important things for us, to be able to bring work to children so that they, that everybody, it's like that kind of demographic thing, everybody gets a chance to experience it. That's like children from all socioeconomic backgrounds as well. And also in a school, you meet children of all abilities, disabilities and needs. And it's kind of that space is their space. And if you bring something into the space, the majority of the time we try and make the work as accessible as possible. So that those children can experience the work with their classmates. And it's, so I think that's another thing that we want to really ensure that's the reason we're doing it. So there's another thing here. There's a lot of writing there. This came from a teacher who, I suppose we work really hard to bring work to schools. It's really hard to do it. And then for teachers to come and tell you the reason that you did it was something that they needed, is it really kind of validates what we're doing. But the challenges that teachers have and schools have is that they're not close to arts infrastructure. And buses are really expensive. And a teacher might really want to bring their children somewhere, but they can't afford to. So by us finding a way through whatever amount of funding we can get to get to them, then that's something I think that's really worthwhile part of our work. There's a map. Is it all gone? Some of it's there. So in 2025, by the end of 2025, we will have performed 331 performances of 6 different shows nationally and internationally. But 197 of those performances will have been in schools this year. We have 104 of them were in actual school buildings, and 14 were in a hall in which small schools could come together and get to. And it's like some of the schools that we work with, you can fit the entire school in the teacher's car and they can bring them to the show. So I think that in springtime we had a show called Clan Lear, which was Gohomlan Oscailge, and it was for we toured in the west of Ireland. We toured to 58 schools, Gael schools, and schools, particularly in the Gaeltacht, who are quite rural as well. And to bring a show to them in their own language was something that's important to us always. But we were able to do that by partnering with other funding bodies. So we used our funding from the Arts Council, but we also partnered with Ali and the Gael, that Frida is here today. We partnered with the Irish Language Officer in Galway County Council. We used local authority funding. We got funding from Forest na Gaeilge, and we amalgamated all that into a pot to make sure that event was something that would be affordable to those schools. And price is a huge issue. When you only have a tiny school, you don't have the same funding as bigger schools. So price is a big issue. And to be able to make something we were trying to sell this show, and then all of a sudden we managed to, Frida came on board with more funding, and all of a sudden the price dropped by 100 euro per school, and it went. And that's how delicate the price point is with schools. We also have so that's Clan Lear there, and we partner with, most people know Mikel Barcelo. We co-produced Mikel Barcelo's Ballad of a Bandit. Ballad of a Bandit is currently on the road. It has touring funding to specifically go into schools, and it is going to be in 80 schools by the end of this year. And we also partnered with local authorities in five different local authorities so that could happen. And those local authorities in some places identified schools that they hadn't reached, and we were able to with Ballad of Bandit get to them. And the majority of those schools are very rural schools and very small schools who, like, I can't say for definite, but I will say that they probably don't get, they haven't had a live theatre show in their classroom before. And I think that's kind of like the value of the work. I'm flying through this now.
You've plenty of time.
Oh, do I? Okay.
Yeah.
Key considerations, ladies and gentlemen. Schools are not theatre spaces, so we have to understand that the thing you bring in there is not going to look as shiny as it does in a theatre venue. You can't rely on lights. You have to rely on the story working because you don't have any other bells and whistles. A school hall generally is a big, bright place. So that has to be a consideration. So design, from the get go for a piece that goes into schools has to be key. You need to decide on your age range. Obviously, you need to decide on basically everybody's going to be sitting on the flat. So you need to make sure that it's going to be something that everyone can see. I mentioned there, funding is essential to make this work, because it's not a profit making, nothing profit. What's that? it's not something that you can actually afford to do, but so you need to have funders come on board to make sure that these children get access to the work that, because if not, it's not an affordable option for a company to make. For example, Clonlair going into was 58 schools, cost over $100,000 to do something like that. And I think that partnering with other organizations to pull pots together, because everybody has the same remit. Everybody needs to find a way to get to children or get to schools. And you just need to be able to offer the opportunity to help people spend their funding, I think, is a way. That's a bit cheeky, isn't it? Everyone said it. It's a resource heavy endeavor. It takes an awful lot of phone calls. It takes an awful lot of emails. It takes somebody constantly in contact with schools. And, you have to realize that the principal might be teaching. So there's only a certain point of the day where you're going to get them. And if you don't get them, that's that day gone. So you need to understand, the ecology of a school and what way that works. The presence to the secretary when you get there is always a good thing to do. Bring sweets. So let me see now. Well, again, logistics. Logistics is something that, should I have gone on the clicker? No. Logistics. Make sure your set is light. Make sure that you have a team that are willing to put that set together every day, and make sure that it's not a really complicated thing to do. Make sure that you have a van that everything will fit in and that it works and that it's going to start every morning and get you to the school. Make sure that you can get it set up within 40 minutes and get it taken down within 40 minutes, because if you're there after home time, you're going to be there for an hour or two long, because you won't be able to leave. You can't get your van into the yard. So there's so many things that you need to have line up perfectly for your day to work in school. You should arrive not before 9, but around 9, so that everybody is in already, and then you have free rein. And make sure that everybody knows you're coming. Make sure you know what you're bringing. Have somebody contact them. In the beginning, when I didn't have the brilliant people that I have working with me now in Branner, in the beginning, I'd be on the phone leaving a school, ringing the next day to see, is everything okay? And often I've got, oh no, that's in suit now. That's because what we were doing is a little bit haphazard. So I think the clearer you are with the school and the information that you're sharing with them, the better it is for the experience for everybody. The final thing is, like, we will always ensure that the people who are performing with us will be the people who are going to be putting the set together, are going to be the people who are talking to the school and everything. And just for every, just kind of ensure that the people that you have working with you have the same ethos as you, have the same interest in what you do, and have and are going to carry forward the way in which you want the work to be presented and received. And Sinead Maid Wimshaw.
Thank you. Okay. So there's Mikael in full flight, and can you imagine that, coming into your class and suddenly somebody standing on your table, and wonderful, the irreverence and the boldness of it all, just livening up the classroom and the possibilities and the imagination of students. But thank you to all of the panelists for really rich kind of opening discussions and thoughts. And I know we have a room full of thoughts fizzing around here as well. So don't worry, we will have some time for questions at the end. But I guess to get the ball rolling and just to have some discussion with the panels, lots was mentioned about really the partnerships and alliances, I suppose, being really crucial and key. It came up in all discussions. I just wonder, is there a way that we should be thinking about partnerships and alliances that makes it easier? And I'm thinking particularly about independent theatre makers or people who are wanting to go into schools but may not have, similar to what you were saying there, Mark, you know, may not have all the infrastructure around them. How can we provide some sustainability in this area? Is there anything that you have found that you do, and I'm thinking particularly of production hubs, or, you know, there are different things that are coming on streams. How does that help, or how could it help?
Misha?
Possibly, yeah.
Look, I thought it was really interesting with Noel, the way that there's a central person looking after the booking, and that they're like, and that's a really clever model that artists can go to, and they have like a central vehicle, if you like, to do all the contact with the schools. And obviously that person's going to have the experience, and there's already a way of, this is what we say, this is how we do, and this is when you're going to be there, and the schools are used to it as well. And that's what it comes down to, is knowing, it's like a production. You need to know what to say and when you're going to be, and who's taking the booking.
Yeah, just to back that up, that national schools manager is also our festival schools manager as well. So they have really great relationships with very key people. It's all about these champions constantly. But I'm going to just share anecdotally, my career began touring to schools. And when I hear all of this information, I'm kind of taken back to Victoria, which is the size of the UK. And we would do 3 schools a day and we would sometimes swap at lunchtime and move to another school. So we would leave on a Monday and in one direction in Victoria and come back Friday night. So this sort of work is just, it's not new. It's been happening all across the globe for years, and we're constantly reinventing it, constantly having to justify why it's important. And the thing that remains the same is the school's hunger for it. I mean, to stand up in a regional town performing about a kind of a young gay teenager's rights and having a standing ovation from teenagers, it's mind-blowing. And you're realizing, you know, you are changing or you're reflecting back stories to people in remote areas that they don't have access to otherwise. And they go, this is my life. And they see pathways and possibilities. And that's why it's so important that we keep doing this. And finding these partners is so crucial. So sometimes local authorities, for example, for us, they're interested in, you know, Gaelic. Like you know, I didn't talk about that at all. We haven't had one yet. And we're really hoping that will happen next year. And it's really refreshing that you're performing in your own language. It's crucial.
And I think it's worth mentioning, actually, you know, 25% of the children educated in Galway are educated through the Irish language. And that's not counting all the languages that are present in the homes of the children coming from many different cultural and linguistic backgrounds. And it's something that I suppose we do take for granted in a bilingual city like Galway, where we have the Gaeltacht on our doorsteps. But as Mark was saying, the difference it makes to a school, a rural school, for it come the school, somebody professional coming in and doing and performing in that language. And I'm conscious that Mi Malzer was translated to Misha Malzer, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, all of Brandon Kennedy.
Yes, yeah. And so did you, and so they were performed into Irish-speaking schools in particular?
Yes, we did get funding from Forest and Gilgar as well. And we found, we found it was much easier. There was much more support from Irish Language Fund, much more eager as well. Mm-hmm. And it was probably easier actually to get more schools that way too. But just to talk about the partners, and one of the things we're trying out with this tour is that we've partnered with particular venues because we've recognized through our relationship with them that the person, the champion in the learning and engaged department or the education department or whatever it is, has got good relationships with schools already. And that's what we're using. And so we're sort of saying to them, you have your relationships with schools and we'll bring a show for you to cement and to further those relationships with those schools. That's worked very well. Sometimes it's a local arts office. Sometimes, it, you see what I mean? That person, that champion could pop up in lots of different places. But it seemed the idea of in Ireland as having a sort of a national schools manager would be fantastic, but who's going to pay? You know, who's, yeah, that. But also, another thing is that person, Deirdre Melvin, for example, in Linen Hall, Maeve O'Shea in The Everyman, they have a really, it's because of them individually and those relationships they've formed that that part of the tour is going to go well.
And I suppose, Claire, you mentioned that as well, you know, the libraries and the venues and that model of the show not touring into the venue even, that it is the venue touring the show out of the venue, actually.
Yeah, I mean, the venue is the linchpin in the middle of it all. And like you said, the people you mentioned, Reset Riverbank is another one who needs to mention, like, it's just their relationships with the schools are amazing. And like I said in the presentation, we quite strategically engaged with all of the different venues to say, you know, like, what do you need? Who are the schools? Like, we got new schools on board, schools that hadn't interacted. Offering a reciprocal visit to the art center was part of the offer. So Paul would go out to the school, do the work, and then to try and get them in, not even to be a theater, to visual arts, to a workshop, to something else, just to build that up and to start it. And, you know, even small things can go a really long way in terms of kids, like giving out stickers, things with information, like stuff that can really, you know, makes a difference with it, you know. But yeah, that connection with the venue is absolutely essential. And that's not possible for an individual artist or a producer, you know, to have that, not across the entire island, you know?
Absolutely. And I suppose conscious as well that when there's shows in schools and, you know, they come directly in contact with the artists.
Yeah.
And then when we go to, when children are taken to venues as part of a festival, I suppose the really crucial work of extending the performance and the pre-show and the post-show work that's done by a lot of teachers being champions as well, having been inspired by the shows, and then the work that's done by theatre companies on teachers' packs. And I know I see many people here in the audience who've done a huge amount of work on that kind of extension of performances, which is also, I suppose, a way of going into a school in that way. And I guess the big thing, I suppose, looking at the Scottish model, I'm struck very, it's quite stark. The cost seems to be less to tour. It seems to be less expensive, as in you get two shows for €575, which I don't imagine you would get very much close to that in Ireland. I may be wrong, but I think that the touring, but that's outside of the per diems and the
correct.
Yes.
Correct.
So just maybe talk us through that in case we think so much cheaper to make work in Scotland.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. That's just the model we've come up with. Okay. I should also preface and say Theatre in Schools Scotland is not the only way people tour to schools in Scotland. There are other companies, commercial companies, doing it themselves. And there are also companies, sometimes Catherine Wheels will come to us and say, we've got an existing tour and they're associated with us. So we'll not necessarily be giving them that kind of fee, but we'll help extend the tour, arrange the bookings, and then do the payment directly to them. Mm. So there's lots of ways that we try and make it flexible as possible. But yes, I mean, bringing the cost down was a trigger point in enabling the, once we got over the pilot program, to make sure that it continued. But yeah, we are also on the other side of that now, seeing the dearth, the kind of lack of, when we do a call out, we're kind of really shocked at how few works are available. And that is heartbreaking, I find. I kind of go, yeah, people are trying to do everything on the smell of an oily rag, and that is not great. I don't know the way forward. Maybe with this trust and foundation support, we'll be able to build up more money that we can help. We know we've got ambitions to develop work. This is just all above and beyond our means at the moment.
But talk us through the free nature of, so this with the 10th celebration.
Yeah.
So what might this, what is the hope for this?
Okay, so we could have just gone with two shows, 14 weeks of touring, but we decided not to. We decided let's try and be more as diverse as possible. So we're having more companies on the road for less weeks. We're trying to cover nurseries and primary schools. We don't go at all into high schools, but to increase the offer even further, we're really now at the last stage where we're talking digital offer as well. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was very successful during the COVID years. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to go, let's be big and bold, and hopefully this will grab everybody's attention. We'll have dance, we'll have, hopefully a Gaelic performance, but also for a while there, we were lacking theatre shows. We were kind of going off. There's a lot of discrete puppetry work, but we feel like the full offer really is what's needed. So it's not finalized yet. So it should hopefully be online within the next few months when NTS announces their program, because they like to be flashy. And we're kind of buried in their announcements. So if you see it, click on it and scroll down to page 10 of their media release, and we'll be there.
Brilliant. And I'm with the very best of luck and wishes for that. That sounds like an amazing initiative, and one that I'm sure we'll all be watching closely, particularly that relationship between the National Theatre and yourselves. So I loved the, you mentioned, I suppose, Mags, that creative schools associates are, they can be the confidence of the schools. Mm. I loved that phrase. Mm. Talk a little bit more, perhaps. Yeah. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what that takes. I suppose, what is that, the purpose of being that confidence?
Yeah. I suppose when schools apply to the program, they apply because it's a €4,000 budget attached. When they leave the program, the thing they miss most is the creative associate. It's not the money really at all. It's the person. They find it really difficult actually to break up with their creative associate. We had to intervene a few times. because if you put yourself in the shoes of that champion teacher who really passionately believes in the role of the arts in your school, but you have a million other responsibilities every day, and you probably coming up against some barriers to bringing the arts into your school. And then suddenly a fellow traveler walks in and says, well, it's my job to support you for the next 2 years, and we are going to work together as a team. And creative, like, it's a modest amount of time as well. It's like 9 days each school year, which you think, oh, it's not really going to go very far. But if you can bring your creative associate to your board of management meeting and say, isn't it fantastic? Our school is a creative school. Look what we can do. Like, if you can galvanize the community by having this extra person to come in and be on your team, that's really helpful. If you can, you know, your creative associates will also bring really good things like, you know, tools in youth consultation. So you want to figure out what your students are actually interested in and what sort of art forms they want to pursue. And the creative associates, why don't we try this? You know, I often think creative associates have some of the most active WhatsApp groups I've ever come across, because they're constantly like, now this school here, they're interested in underwater ballet with a disco theme. Well, you know, what will we do here kind of thing? So it's that kind of, like, if you imagine it as a kind of a community, well, we don't even imagine it. We name it a community of practice for those artists. And really interestingly, like people we've mentioned today, we're lucky enough to have our creative associates. So Maeve O'Shea in the Everyman, as well as being an amazing force for good at the Everyman, is also a creative associate in the Creative Skills Program. So creative associates are not different to the sector. They are the sector. They're just a piece of infrastructure that we're able to say to these professionals, you can come on contract with us for 4 years and we will have some sense of where you're going to be. Now, it changes all the time and it's never perfect. And there are loads of things about the creative associate that I'd love to make better, but you know, that's life, isn't it? But they are there to really journey with the school over 2 years, to really to support them and to kind of imagine with them and be like, what if we did, or why wouldn't we try? Or, you know, it's fine. I know we really want to do that. I'll go off and research the three different places we could go on that trip and come back to you with the options. All that bit of time that teachers run out of, they can give. So they're kind of, you know, they're journeying with the teacher, they're supporting it, they're doing really practical things. If you're a teacher who's never engaged a professional artist, like, how much do you pay them? Like, is there a contract? Like, all those things, like, there's just somebody there to answer all those questions. And the other thing that creative associates have become increasingly adept at, I think, is working with schools to unlock other pieces of funding. So to say to them, oh, did you know your local authority has this scheme for schools? Or did you actually know that, you know, such and such art center considers you in their remit? Would you like me to make the call and see if they have anything? Like, creative associates are happy to get no's all the time and, you know, move on. So they can, it's just that, it's just a boost to that teacher. It's just enough of a boost. And then hopefully what happens, and actually, you know, we know this happens when schools kind of transition out of the program, is they carry that confidence with them. They carry the relationships with them. They carry that sense of entitlement to services in the arts for the children and young people in their school. And they also carry some commitment to youth voice as well. And that idea that children and young people are just as much part of the decision-making as what they might do as well. So yeah, does it work 100% for every school? No, because every school is different. But in the vast majority of cases, we really see a kind of a partnership flourish. And that's where the confidence comes.
So from this space of artist-led, child-led, entitlement-led, creativity-led, and festival-led, we are very grateful to all of our speakers here today, to Mark McLaughlin, Mags Walsh, to Claire O'Neill, Bill Kingston, and of course, to the lovely Noel Jordan. We are thrilled to have had you all there.